Nicolas Cage has to guard former First Lady Shirley MacLaine in Drowning Mona. Sorry. Chasing Amy. Sorry. Eating Raoul. Sorry. Finding Nemo. Sorry. Guarding Tess, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean. I'm here with two football players who just want to play the game and don't know why this kid's around. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Kids love sugar.
And Camila Adams.
Hello.
Yeah, we talked about Dwayne Johnson in the game plan. 17.67. 17 and two-thirds was our score. Mm. That is fifth from the bottom. We liked it more than those two Transformers. We liked it more than Rob Zombie's Halloween. And we liked it more than the worst Friday the 13th are the only movies it's better than. So we've moved on from that to, you know, a movie. I had never seen this. Anybody?
No.
Like I said, I think I saw this in the theater.
Okay.
Yeah. And I remember thinking it was cute and charming. And I still think it's cute and charming.
Are you 10?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it just has no consequence at all. This is like, this movie is such a soap bubble.
That is one way to put it. Yes.
Very few movies with no consequence end with a like serious kidnapping out of a buried in the ground kidnapping. Spoilers. Yeah. Sorry. Because honestly, by that point, I was looking at the screen, you know, once every 4 minutes just to make sure the movie was still happening. And I was like, what do you mean she's buried in a farmhouse? Right. What happened here?
I feel like you have to have her have some form of peril to like justify the plot.
In existence.
Right. And yet a better movie would have not had any peril.
That could be they're on the island having a picnic and a bear wanders up. Like
good thing there's a guy with a gun just because.
And then he suddenly drops his gun and then we have a wacky scene with the bear. End movie.
Wasn't the like inoperable brain tumor
enough? Yes. Right?
You got that. Oh, that's why you're acting terrible. Oh, let's be friends. And yes. Let's live your life before you have to go. You know, like, just, I don't know. But,
but you know, it was short and fluffy. Which
it is so 90s fluffy.
Like marshmallow, yeah. Marshmallow fluff. What do you call it? Mallow or just fluff?
Marshmallow fluff. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I know these times don't quite line up, but I feel like Jurassic Park was sold out and I didn't feel like just turning around and going home. Yes. So this is what I get. And you walk out going, oh, that was fine. I got my dots. Remember you used to be able to get a big thing of dots at the movie theater?
This is like Dennis and Carol go to the movies and Dennis wants to see Forrest Gump again. Mm-hmm. And Carol is like, I'm going to go see that movie with that Shirley MacLaine. I just love Terms of Endearment.
Is Dennis and Carol the early 90s Chad and Karen? Is that one?
Yes. I was imagining older middle-aged people.
I feel like
in the 90s, white people.
This movie should only be watched after eating a mediocre salmon dinner at a well-lit restaurant that is playing smooth jazz.
Yeah. But here's the thing. As we've discussed, I am a basic bitch.
Yeah.
And this, I don't know, it worked for me. I mean, it's not like, this is not good. And if you've never seen it, I'm not going to be like, you know what you need to watch.
No.
But if you are flipping through the channels and it's on TBS, you know what you might as well stick around and watch? Guarding Tess.
We've got zero things. While you're folding laundry.
Yeah.
While you're vacuuming.
God made laundry folding movies for a reason.
I'm trying to decide if all of those blanking name movies I said in the intro are better than this. I don't know if I've seen Drowning Mona. Which one's Drowning Mona?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I never saw it.
Finding Nemo's certainly better. Chasing Amy is certainly better.
Oh, God, no. I would watch Guarding Tess over Chasing Amy any day of the week.
I have not rewatched. I have not revisited Chasing Amy in a long time.
Okay, neither have I, because I know better.
Yeah, I don't remember enjoying it the first time
exactly.
around.
Exactly. And I'm smarter about the world than I was then. And even then, I was like, wait a second.
We just watch Mallrats again. That's fine. Okay. That's a good time.
The escalator shit. I'll watch a YouTube clip of that from time to time.
Fear and respect that escalator.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mallrats aside, is that the same year? Is that a 1994 movie?
Feels like it. Maybe 93? Something no, like that? Maybe somewhere probably within 5 years of that. Maybe.
Yeah. So 94 is the year that we moved back to New Jersey. And I believe Guarding Tess came out in the pre-moving to New Jersey portion.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out, I guess, in the facts, and I'll discover if I really did see this in the theater. I think Mallrats came out when I lived in New Jersey. But
95.
There you go.
Noah's really great. Mallrats mentions Jaws once every 4 minutes. So as soon as Mallrats ended, I just started watching Jaws like half asleep. That was great.
About Jaws is that you don't need to be awake to enjoy Jaws.
No,
not at all. So I thought about, we're so far off Guarding Tess, but I just bought the coziest comforter and declared that it's a downstairs comforter. This is not a sleep comforter. This is a couch comforter.
Guarding Tess is a downstairs comforter of a movie.
No.
That's still too generous.
Okay, no. What if it's like a loose knit throw?
It's one of those Chanel throws that you get that like at the bargain bin and fucking at Ross.
Yeah. And you know what I fucking love?
The bargain bin at Ross.
Exactly.
If you don't know how the first lady winds up buried in a hole in this comforter of a movie, let's recap it for you. I think it's Camila's turn.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to help anybody much better.
Whenever you're ready.
Secret Service agent Doug thinks it's his last day on shit detail of guarding the former first lady Tess, but the current president makes him stay because she doesn't want him to go. Now he has an attitude. He wants to be back in D.C. and do the real work. She is insufferable and very particular, and it just becomes a battle of wills and who can be the bigger asshole. They go on this way for quite some time. Turns out Tess has an inoperable brain tumor. The chauffeur kidnaps Tess. She's buried alive under the floorboards. Doug rescues her, and he and Tess are going to be all right.
That's really all you need to know.
I zoned out and don't feel that I missed anything.
I fell asleep. I full on like so drooling. Just, fell asleep.
As the person in this room who enjoyed this movie,
sure.
I will go into why I think it could have been like this could have been, I think, genuinely, I don't want to say genuinely great, but like this could have been a like top notch mid 90s low stakes comedy if they did a better job with the transition from the Battle of Wills segment to the Begrudging Acceptance segment, because it just feels like it goes way too fast.
Yeah.
And feels like not fully emotionally justified. Right? Like she has this conversation with her son,
right?
Where he is bilking her for money. And I guess she's kind of like, my son doesn't really love me. She doesn't talk to her daughter, and presumably not her daughter's children, and her husband's dead. And so she's like, I'm all alone, and she has... This is such a funny pre-YouTube detail of this.
Or watching her husband's funeral?
Yes, she has a videotape, like, someone had to edit for her a video cassette montage.
Right, of like all of the highlight, the news
moments,
coverage.
Yes.
It's like his inauguration is on the same tape.
Right.
Like those aren't that long.
It's a super long play, 8 hour best of my husband's administration.
Give me the highlights.
Yes. So she watches the highlight reel and notices that Nicolas Cage is there the whole time and notices that he was sad at her husband's funeral and then is like, maybe he's okay. And that one sequence, possibly partially because I got so distracted by the absurdity of a super long play highlight reel, is not enough.
No, it happens really. It's like
so
in the blink
fast.
Of an eye, and you're not even 100% sure. Is that Nicolas Cage? Like, you know, like the audience, it's not very clear. And also, you're right, her transition to how she's feeling about him now is not very clear.
And I also, my memory of this movie was that she was. The reason that she wanted him, the reason she requested the president keep him, is that she liked him all along. But watching it now, it felt like she wanted him because she knew she could push him around. What did you think?
I thought it felt like I already trained this one.
Exactly. Yes.
So.
Yeah, it felt like the only thing I hate more than you is change.
Right.
You know, but then until the kidnapping, or maybe until watching the VHS montage, which you're right. This is why panning over newspaper headlines on frames on the wall was invented.
We yes. Could've,
before that, it felt like.
Also, by the way, you know how you justify that? This is a little improv lesson for everyone. Mm-hmm. I've spent the last 10 years yeah. making things that don't make sense. She's working on the presidential library. Mm. They say, we have the lobby video ready.
Yeah.
Would you like to review
Look
it?
At that.
Yeah. Easy peasy.
Yeah.
So simple. But until that happens, the entire movie is one of them is a bigger dick than normal. The other one gets mad. The one who was a bigger dick apologizes, but then the other one is a dick about the apology in six loops that don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating to watch. Mm. It's just unpleasant.
Yeah. Especially like the opera thing, like the whole,
yeah.
that it seemed like it was a waste. Like it just wasn't a waste. It was like a wasted segment, like a wasted scene because it wasn't that funny.
No,
it was nothing.
I was mortified. I had secondhand embarrassment when her hairpiece came off.
Right. Yes. And then, for her to be like, oh, I want to leave immediately, and then everybody still loves her, and she's like, oh, I'm going to stay, and then we don't really do anything else in Columbus? Like, that's...
I liked the scenes where they show Shirley MacLaine is really good at her job, mm. her job being mm. First Lady,
right.
or former First Lady. I enjoyed those scenes, and I thought that was one of them. Like, she's so mad, and then turns the corner and literally has to, like, be, like, public face!
Right.
And I'm entertained by that. And my favorite thing in the entire fucking movie is when they go to the grocery store and the grocery store manager says, does she want to be known today? And that just says so much and is such a funny concept. And also, I wish I had that option.
Right?
Yes.
Seriously. It's like, no.
My favorite thing in the entire movie is the first shot of the picnic because it wandered in out of an Ingmar Bergman movie.
Yes.
It's just an old lady sitting at a table on a little patch of grass with water all around staring at nothing. I'm like, oh, art. Art happened.
I immediately said, that's not fucking Ohio. And it sure as hell isn't. That's Maryland.
Filmed in Maryland.
Yes.
Here are some other facts. This was released March 11th, 1994. The fifth number one
right.
still lived
movie
in Pennsylvania. I saw this in the theater.
Okay.
Yep.
Only the fifth number one that year because most of the early weekends were either Mrs. Doubtfire or Ace Ventura Pet Detective Woof. Trading back and forth. One that weekend was $7 million over fellow debuts Lightning Jack. Do you know Lightning Jack?
I what do. Is that?
If Camila, if I said you have a week, I want you to guess the three stars of this movie. You couldn't succeed. If you named every celebrity you could possibly name, you would never, a million combinations.
This was a number one movie, whatever
it was. Number two behind Guarding
Whoopi
Tess.
Whoopi Goldberg and fucking... What, Ray Liotta? No, that's...
Yeah, makes too much sense.
Different black actor who won an Oscar in the 90s.
And I'm out.
You hate him.
Cuba?
Yes, Cuba.
Lightning Jack is a Western starring Paul Hogan, Crocodile Dundee, Cuba Gooding Jr., and Beverly D'Angelo.
That is improv.
Yeah.
It's like,
give me three actors.
This wasn't repeated until the rundown with The Rock, Christopher Walken, and Sean William Scott. There was
right.
not a more absurd trio.
Both have one Academy Award winner in the mix.
That's true.
Yep.
Lightning Jack was close, $5.4 million. I kind of want to watch it now. I know it's going to be terrible. But.
I am not sure I've ever actually seen Lightning Jack, but Abby Feuder, friend of the show, would weirdly reference that movie all the time.
Really?
Yes.
Somebody got a VHS in the bargain bin.
Exactly. Or it's like, that's the one movie at the cabin.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Also finished ahead of The Ref, a crime comedy with Dennis Leary.
Love that movie up until Spacey did his shit.
Yeah.
The following weekend fell to second behind Naked Gun, 33 and a third. And as much as few of these movies we're talking about are classics, and it's the beginning of the year, but the box office at this stretch... I didn't realize the 90s were soaked in comedy.
Yeah.
It's Mrs. Doubtfire, Ace Ventura, Naked Gun, Guarding Tess. Is Lightning Jack a comedy?
It sure is.
It better be.
It's allegedly a comedy. Let's put it that way. It's intended to be a comedy.
All of these mainstream comedies vying for attention.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah.
That is now firmly over. Remember last year when they were like, the R-rated comedy is back. Combined gross of 12 movies, yeah, about $70 million.
The R-rated comedy is back 6 weeks later on streaming. And listen, I'll take it.
Yeah, sure. Total was $27 million for Guarding Tess, just 49th overall for the year. Expensive baubles.
Was this the era of the musical and comedy score? Because boy, was this ever a musical and comedy score.
No.
Okay.
That was gone. The only significant nomination.
I was going to say, Shirley MacLaine probably got a Golden Globe out of this one, nomination.
Shirley MacLaine was nominated at the Golden Globes for Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy, lost to Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies.
One of my favorite Golden Globe wins of all time.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. None of the five women in comedy or musical went on to be nominated at the Oscars that year.
Yes. Also, notoriously one of the worst Best Actress Oscar years ever.
This is the Jessica Lange for That Thing You Told Me Not to Watch?
No one should ever watch Blue Sky. It's terrible.
It's Nell, Jodie Foster and Nell.
Yes,
and
Jodie Foster. Yay.
Jodie Foster, another Academy Award nomination this morning.
29 years later.
We'll get to it later. This is the work of director and co-writer Hugh Wilson. He is the creator of WKRP in Cincinnati.
Oh! That was the heavenly...
If I ever mention WKRP in Cincinnati again, we better hear that sound. Camila put her headphones down and... There's a button. You know how... there's the buttons, sound effect buttons. Yes.
It was like a heavenly chime.
No, like a harp, like a wind chiming.
It was the angels of all the turkeys of the turkey
this
drop.
This bottom right one is heaven.
And people love that show.
I loved that show.
I used to like it.
Yeah.
It's hard to find because I guess...
Music.
It's all identifiable rock music, and so the rights can never be obtained again, you know? So because he did that series, he had a long, if kind of mediocre career as a result. He did this. We've seen his work before. He did the first Police Academy.
Oh.
And to his credit, he did the first one and then bailed.
Good for him.
He
didn't
keep taking the check. You're like, do what you want. But First Wives Club is his.
Oh, love that one.
That's his voice as the president. Yeah. He is the president.
You know, when they said the president was coming, I was like, there's no way that the president is actually coming because I would remember who played the president.
Because this movie is not all that interesting, there's not that much more on my list. Just to clarify, because the details are shaky, even if you're watching the VHS, Tess's husband was the president, died in office of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. The current president was that guy's vice president. And
has since been reelected because she's... co-nominated him or whatever at the convention.
Right.
Yes, that was confusing.
This movie does not care.
No, it really is not important.
It would be more interesting if it did. Like, if there were a little, like, political context. Yes. I realize in a movie like this, you don't want to, like, peg it to political parties or any actual issues because then you could lose people. But
they did do that thing where they're like, Nancy Reagan does exist in this universe. Don't you dare say that this is Nancy Reagan.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, boy, is Somersville, Ohio in the middle of nowhere. It is a real place. It is about 2 hours northwest of Columbus. So basically the part of Ohio with absolutely nothing
at all.
It's
Flatch.
You were near there. You grew up.
Yeah. Toledo. Toodly-doo, Ohio.
And from what I can tell, like there's Toledo and isn't Dayton kind of near Toledo.
Toledo's at the very tip top, right. And it's like an hour south of Detroit. So,
right.
And then Akron comes next.
Akron is to the, like, if you're looking at the map, Akron is to the right.
And no, Akron's Cleveland, part of Cleveland.
Oh, Akron's so to like Toledo, the Akron, east of Dayton. Yeah. Got it.
And Columbus is smack in the middle, but if you
of Toledo.
If you go.
Dayton is further.
If you
south.
Go away from Columbus, there's. Fuck all, and that is where
this movie happens. Folks, we live really close to Ohio.
Right.
And we're like, yeah, that square full of cities that we don't live in.
Right, yeah, it's like it's 4 hours to drive to Toledo from here.
No.
Mysterious faraway land, Toledo.
Am I saying that right? What is this? Toledo? What is this?
I drove to Detroit last year, but it took me 38 years of my life to go to like a major city that's 5-ish hours away.
Because so that was your first time going to Detroit?
It was my first time in Detroit.
Wow.
Yeah. It was fine. You get the hot dogs.
The Coney Island dogs. Yeah, go to the casino.
I had Tony Paco's hot dogs when I was in Toledo.
Yep, that's a big deal there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I knew about it because of MASH.
Yeah, Jamie Farr.
Yeah.
From Toledo.
Finally, quoting directly from IMDb trivia, stars Shirley MacLaine and Nicolas Cage became great friends while filming.
That makes so much sense to me.
Due to their mutual love of animals and would...
That part I was not expecting.
What?
You were only halfway there. And would go on to co-adopt many animals together, including a ferret named Whiskers and a zebra named Mr. Zed.
Yeah, me and Shirley MacLaine are really good friends.
Listen, they are people who have always owned their own quirkiness.
Yes.
Yeah. And so... I can see them getting along.
What was the thing that she's psychic or something? That was like a meme in the 90s that Shirley MacLaine talks to dead people all the time.
She like believed in past lives and like talked to mediums and stuff.
Is this our second Shirley MacLaine?
We did Some Came Running.
Yeah, so this is our second one.
Those are not even the same person in my mind.
I feel like we might have done another one somewhere. I feel like we've talked a lot about Shirley MacLaine.
Okay.
Because I love her.
It's just, I don't think that they worked all that talent.
Yeah.
Shirley MacLaine and Nicolas Cage in one movie, and it just still felt flat. And I don't know what happened. Was this their first meeting?
I saw this stuff where they were like, oh, the chemistry between the leads carries it. And I was like, where was that?
Right.
I felt it.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't buy it at all.
Not at all. Like, it was like they shot it all in the first day of meeting. Like, that's what it felt like to me. And like, I'm glad that they got along in real life and became besties and, you know, have zebras and fucking.
I thought she was. I know it's not that Nicolas Cage drives a horse trailer with a zebra in it up to Shirley MacLaine's house in the middle of the night. Says it's your week with Mr. Zed.
But I hope it is.
Yeah. I thought she did a good job. If I have to say, I think she was operating in a more serious movie than this is.
Yes.
And
well, her character's dying.
I guess.
But it's not really. They don't. Really lean into that.
No.
It's just kind of like a
I wonder if there was a draft of this movie where her dying was the conflict at the, you know, that allowed for the third act, and then the studio was like, put her in a hole in the ground. Because it does feel a little bit like that. However, I will say that Nicolas Cage shooting Austin Pendleton's toe off in a hospital has stayed with me for 30 years.
I mean, That's it, but to get there, again, Camila addressed this, but if you missed it or just didn't believe it, when this movie decides it's time to go home, the way it does that is by having a minor character who has no reason to be aggrieved, is clearly very well taken care of.
Right.
She sticks, like, he gets fired by Nicolas Cage because he drives off with Shirley MacLaine without the other Secret Service agents. He's just a chauffeur.
Right.
And Nicolas Cage is like, technically, you are under employee of the Secret Service and you're fired. And then Shirley MacLaine calls the president and the president tells him, no, no he's not.
Yeah.
So this guy is super double extra non-aggrieved.
Yeah.
So for no clear reason, with no clear plan, and with, I don't care if you're the billiest hillbilly in the world, you know that ransoming the former first lady is probably not going to work.
Yeah.
Instead of any logical thing.
Kidnap for ransom doesn't work when it's a normal person in the United States.
I don't know if I've ever heard of a successful.
It doesn't work in the United States. You can't get away with it.
That and also like, you know, just holding people hostage and be like, yeah, I want a plane. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
A kidnapping plot that depended on her coincidentally saying, I want to go for a picnic with just you.
Yeah. Yeah.
A thing that she would never say until this moment because she watched the VHS tape last night.
It's kind of frustrating.
It's an abrupt tonal shift.
Yes. Frustrating is the word, particularly because, and this is my last point before I just kind of
Madoff.
Yeah. Are we supposed to care about this guy who's angry that he has the easiest version of a difficult job?
Oh, Nick Cage.
He's watching Revolution footage and going, I want to be there.
Yeah, I don't, like, what would he say, like 3 years? It's only been like 3 years that he's been doing this?
If he truthfully wants to be in the action, which is what he said to his boss.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to say to your boss, get me away from this heinous bitch.
Yeah.
Right? I think he is fully entitled to want to get away from that heinous bitch. I don't have any problem with him being like, I know this job is easy, but it's not, though, because he's constantly being belittled and also having to compromise the rules he's supposed to follow. Like, I really don't see a Secret Service agent being comfortable leaving his gun outside the room.
No.
And it makes sense to me he would not want that job. And I did feel bad for him when he had to go back to it.
I don't know. I just can't relate to my job is too easy. Make it harder.
There's just those type of people in this world that exist that are like, I feel like I need to earn my money, or adrenaline junkies. Maybe he's an adrenaline junkie.
I think he mostly just wants to get away from this mean lady.
Yeah, because he was like, really, I felt the celebratory.
Yes.
In the first 10 minutes of the movie as he was leaving, damn near floating out of the kitchen.
That Bloody Mary looked so good.
Right? That was like, immediately I'm like...
Yes.
I could go for a Bloody Mary.
Yeah, kudos to whoever put that prop Bloody Mary together.
It did remind me of like when I would be in college and go to New York for a few days, like you go from a speck on the map to like, oh, civilization. There are people and things and lights and colors.
Look at the people walking and doing stuff. What are the responsibilities of a former first lady? Like, why does she need...
You saw him. Make a little speech at the library. And...
She's got secretaries.
Michelle Obama made Origin.
Yeah.
So they're what you feel. They're what you want.
It's like whatever you can get away with as being former first lady.
Right. Or, you know, you become a senator and secretary of state and not president. There's a lot of different things that former first ladies can do. They're like Barbie.
Apparently part of the motivation, or at least the seed for, I've already forgotten his name. Sorry. Andy's no longer with us. So much disrespect.
Hugh Wilson?
Hugh Wilson. At that time, there were more living former presidents and first ladies than at any point in history or something. And so he just started considering like, oh, okay, so there's 12 whole people whose job is to hang out with Lady Bird Johnson right now.
That's interesting.
Huh. That's interesting. I wish it would have led to an interesting movie.
Right.
I thought this movie was fine.
I keep looking at you like, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you had a nice movie time.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not saying it's good. I just had it's fine. What was the one with James Garner and Jack Lemmon as former presidents? My Fellow Americans. Same genre. I think probably better, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
I think I usually just kind of stay away from those type of movies in general. So... fun fact about Nicolas Cage that I just learned the other day, listening to a podcast not about Nicolas Cage.
But Nicolas Cage is everywhere.
He comes up a lot.
Right. Like he's like the new Bacon. but there's a tale of, I forget what, Marie Laveau, but if anybody has ever watched American Horror Story New Orleans, the character that Kathy Bates played is loosely based off of a real woman.
Yes.
And, you know, terrible woman who committed all these heinous crimes against her enslaved peoples and so on and so forth, and supposedly killed like a couple of her husbands or whatever. But any hoozles, they say that the house that she owned was haunted after she, you know, finally died and moved away and all that stuff. People would come through and say they hear like the wailings of the people in the basement and all that stuff. And people would come by and
haunted
do tours. Yeah.
By her victims.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. And Nick Cage bought it. Paid $3.4 million for this. And that is why Nicolas Cage does a movie every 3 hours.
Well, okay, this was before or after the IRS started coming after him. Like, why doesn't the IRS own that haunted house?
I don't know. Yes, but this house, this mansion is in Nolens. And,
good for him. He owns his quirkiness.
I heard they're working on Mandy 2. Looking forward to Mandy 2.
I can't remember if I ever watched Mandy because I watched Pig. I know I saw Pig.
I mean,
Pig was kind of good.
Pig is the Oscar voters' Mandy. Mandy is raw and weird and bloody and intense and has one of those scores that's just someone elbow dropping a synth board that I like. And Pig is, that but thoughtful.
I did watch that. Anyway, doesn't matter.
I really like Mandy. I kind of like Pig.
This movie is almost the 30th anniversary of this movie to the date. Like March. Oh, yeah. 30 years ago, I graduated from high school.
You know what was a little better than Guarding Tess is the trailer for Guarding Tess.
After a lifetime in the public eye, former First Lady Tess Carlisle retired to her Ohio home.
Kimberly!
But she did not go quietly.
What do we look like, waiters? Are we a bunch of waiters?
Just ask the Secret Service agent.
I can't do 3 more years of this.
Guarding Tess.
We are going to the opera in Columbus.
Mrs. Carlisle, that emergency alarm is abused.
That alarm belongs to me, and I will use it by God any time I see fit.
How is she these days? What's she like?
I guess you could say she's several different personalities in one.
Well, one of her personalities called the White House last night and asked the president if he could arrange for you to stay on with him.
The president.
We are not leaving this house until you are seated properly with your seatbelt firmly fastened.
Nope.
It's the worst assignment there is.
I need a price check and LeSueur baby peas.
They're on special today, 2 for $59.
Copy that, Doug, but I believe we've lost interest in peas. Repeat, lost interest in peas.
Doug, she took off!
7 well-trained, heavily armed men can't take care of one little old lady.
Damn!
Shirley MacLaine.
With all due respect, why me?
Because I like you, Douglas.
Please hold for the president.
Nicolas Cage.
I don't get it myself. One day she calls me, says she can't live without you. Next day she's calling almost in tears. You know, maybe you two have some kind of sicko thing going on.
No, sir.
Guarding Tess.
I'm counting on you, and so's the country.
So other than, giving the somewhat misleading impression that this will be a comedy with jokes.
This is totally one of those, all the good jokes are in the trailer situations.
If I saw that, I would probably go. Nah. It's a well-sold concept.
And it has it gets the vibes across very well. It's the soap bubble fluff of the 90s.
Yeah, it's exactly what I thought 30 years ago when I saw the trailer. And I was like, nah, not for me.
And I was like, okay.
What did I give that thing we watched last week?
The game plan.
I think I gave it a
8, maybe.
No,
I gave it an 8. I was mad at the game plan.
I think I gave it a 20. This is significantly better than the game plan.
Yes.
30. Camila?
28.
Robin, bring the average
I'm
up.
I'm going to go to 60.
Wow.
I enjoyed this movie.
I'm glad. I'm glad that one of us had a good time. 39 and a third. 39 and a third. The overskull score for Drowning Mona. I'm just going to keep telling you. Just
Thank
can't
you,
get it.
Nicolas Cage and Shirley MacLaine and Finding Nemo.
I don't know if we have anything on the bingo card. We're looking up.
It's a desk, right?
Someone has to hang up the phone without saying goodbye at some point.
Yeah.
The president.
Yeah, the president. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, here we go. Tess is not a place. This does not contain a place in the title.
I don't feel any connections to Barbie.
Is a presidential library a public library?
Would you be allowed in it?
Yeah, during visiting hours. They're like museums.
And you take stuff out?
No.
Doesn't count.
I mean, I bet researchers do, but no, they're not. It's not like a lending library. Yeah.
Does no one say in this movie you should be out looking for the first lady?
I don't remember it, but again, like I was dozing off heavily.
Robin?
I don't think so.
Oh, boy. All right, well.
Because that would have been my bingo.
Yeah. No, that's, we'll hang up the phone without saying goodbye.
Oh, wait, we all had to pay for it, yeah?
I watched it through
perhaps
other means.
Watched an illegal upload of this to a certain streaming service.
Well, I paid for it.
Okay, right. But so only you get to mark that up.
Okay.
Yeah, that's your square alone.
Okay. Oh, all right.
You paid for it. That's the important thing. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. And as we record this, it is Oscar nomination day. And so we thought the best thing to do would be to let Camila go first in case she wants to go to lunch somewhere in the middle of the conversation that Robin and I will have thereafter.
Shit's going to get really wacky in a minute. with Yin's guys. What did I watch? Where's my list?
Oh, by the way, while you're pulling it up, The Letterboxd is funded by the Pentagon, a list of commercial films completed with assistance from the Pentagon based on a... someone did the work on this. Someone filed a Freedom of Information Act request.
God bless them.
To figure out what movies the Pentagon had a few bucks in. It's all the military-type movies you'd expect, and then there's weird stuff like Pet Sematary is on there and Ernest Saves Christmas.
What?
And Ernest Mac Saves and Christmas. Me. I think that, like, if you reference... the Secret Service or the Defense Department, like, it's standard that you ask, like, hey, is this all okay?
Yeah. But interesting.
There are tiny offices in every branch of the military and most major branches of the government just to do this.
To do film yes or no?
There's, like, four people who work for the Coast Guard answering questions from movies and TV production.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Damn it, had I known that was an option
right.
to when you join the military.
We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Camila Adams right now.
Yeah. So, yes, no.
So,
anyway. I don't remember, had I watched Cobweb last time?
No.
We talked? It's bad.
What is it?
It's a horror movie about a little boy who is hearing noises in his walls, who tells his parents, and they're like, that's okay, there's nothing there, it's your imagination, but it's not his imagination. And I don't know if I should give it away or whatever, but it's just a lot of, like the imagery is scary. The story does not work well because it just leaves you with a lot of questions. Like, I don't. It's like I'm willing to let my mind go a lot with a lot of horror movies and plots, but this I'm not going to allow it. So I would pass that if you it's not it's on Hulu for free. But
is it worth the time it will take me to read the Wikipedia plot summary?
No, because I think you need the visuals to really. Disdain to really hate it.
Okay. So I'll just not watch it.
Yeah. Just leave it alone. And The Passenger, starring, I forget the other dude's name, but Kyle Gallner.
Yeah.
He was one of those dirty white boys that, and I don't know if I've said this before on the show, but he looks like he would eat you out in the bar bathroom and walk it right out and with his chin still wet, ask his friend for a cigarette.
Good Lord. Yeah. Wow, compelling image.
Vivid, yes. Very descriptive.
Yes.
I can picture him now.
Did you watch Veronica Mars?
No, not all of it. I think I watched the first season.
Yeah, so I know him.
That's where he's from?
That's the first thing I ever saw him in when he was very young. And so it's very hard for me to find him attractive in any possible way.
Yeah, understandable. Yeah. Because I've seen some stuff with him, like early things with him. It's like, not so much. But anyway, this movie, he is a dude that works at a Burger King with another dude. And this dude is just kind of like the other guy, the passenger, is just really mealy mouth and just like, no, it's okay. And then so there's one guy who's like just picking on him that works with them, just picking on him so much. And Kyle's in the background, like being really quiet. Dude is like fucking with him while they're trying to open. Kyle is like, stop it, leave him alone. He's like, fuck you, whatever. Kyle goes out to his car, brings his shotgun in and shoots the dude to death and another girl and the manager of the Burger King. This is like the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yikes.
It's... the performances by Kyle and, all right, I feel bad not knowing the passenger's name because I think a lot of people know who he is. Johnny Berchtold. Their performances are amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those movies. So, now they lock up the Burger King and leave. And, by Kyle's standards, okay, I got, 8 hours before anybody really figures out what happened. Mm-hmm. And so they're, driving through town. And, and Kyle is basically trying to, quote, unquote, fix this kid. By telling him what his problems are in his life. You let people walk all over you. Let's go change that. Let's go fix it. And so he's going off and this is your life. And he goes around talking to people that have wronged him or he is wronged in his life. It's very interesting. It's a lot. It's very tense and it's a little stressful throughout them. I think it's very much worth a watch.
I have a thought based on that description. Mm. I feel like if that movie were made in the 70s, and I were just now watching it, I could watch it.
Interesting.
Does that make sense? Some detachment.
Well, what's funny is, like, I spent a majority of the movie thinking that it was set in the 70s.
It has a 70s vibe
right,
to it.
Just like even visually, like the first half of the movie, until like they pull out a cell phone, I'm like, oh, this is supposed to be present day?
How often does that happen? I feel like there are so many times I'm watching something and I'm like, this is a period piece until a cell phone comes out.
Right. But yeah, it was good.
The confusing e-reader in It Follows. That just came from the future to confuse the viewer of this movie. I'm going to briefly mention the things that have nothing to do with the Oscars that deserve mentioning, and then, Robin, you'll carry it the rest of the way. I'm trying to praise the new Mean Girls the right amount, which is I very much support this movie. Uh-huh. I am not going to tell you I love this movie. I'm a giant fan of this movie. I want to watch it again and again, although I have seen it twice because I wanted Mary Beth to see it, especially right before it came out. Like, people were really shitting on this, and it's completely undeserved. It's fun.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh yeah, there was like a little like, it's gonna be terrible, they're hiding that it's a musical because it's
that
bad.
Was the discourse I participated in.
I'm kind of sick of people doing that whole like, oh well, you're being sneaky about it being a musical, like,
but they are. But why are they doing that? It's frustrating. Yes,
apparently they think it doesn't sell tickets.
Well, this worked, right?
Yeah, it worked. People went inside. It's won 2 weekends now. It is the best when it's a musical, like when they like let loose and do essentially music videos in the middle of the movie. Yeah. It's at its best when it's just doing stuff we remember from 20 years ago. It's less good. Mm. But there's a few people in here who are so charismatic and charming. Like, Renee Rapp really feels like she's going to be the biggest star in the world in a couple of years.
About her. Who is that?
She's Regina.
Oh, okay. I know who that is.
And a Louis Cravajo, who was the voice of Moana, completely steals the movie. It's a fun, nice time, especially if you are attached to the original, which so many of us are. It's just like a nice little extra bit of that content you like. Go see Mean Girls if you haven't. Ariana DeBose in ISS, less positive reaction from me. I mean, I still like...
Not enough sadness.
Oh, no, not nearly enough sadness. I'm torn between, like, I don't care. You had people fist fight in space.
Right.
Good movie. Thumbs up. It doesn't matter. I'm torn between that and why weren't you better when you had people fist fighting in space? Like, it doesn't boil over, as Camila likes to say.
She says
like, curl over. Excuse me. It just doesn't quite get where it's going. You don't need to run out and see it. It's fine if you end up, you know, on a plane and want to watch people watch the Earth get bombed below. Probably isn't going to be a plane movie. And two things from very different movies from the past that are instantly some of the best things I've ever seen. The Red Shoes from 1948.
Oh my God, The Red Shoes rules.
It's so good.
It's
one of those movies that you can't be like, oh, it's about this ballerina and she's kind of in a love triangle, but not. And it's just the best thing you've ever seen. But it's just the best thing you've ever seen. It's just one of the most artful films ever. As is influential anime feature Perfect Blue, which I had never seen before.
Never seen it.
Tight little horror movie, head trippy anime from 1997. Also perfect. That is all I want to say aside from responding to. And now for Oscar Corner. Here's Robin Hitchcock.
So before we talk about the Oscars, while we're talking about old movies, I was kind of like on a 30s movie kick last week. I fell asleep during a bunch of them. But the two that I made it all the way through were Dodsworth and the original Love Affair. And both happened to star, I'm probably not saying her name correctly, and the internet couldn't tell me how to do it correctly, but Maria Ouspenskaya.
Oh, yeah. From The Wolfman, right?
I don't know. She's my new favorite actor. That lady is a stone cold bitch in the best possible way. She's not a bitch in Love Affair, but she's so bitchy in Dodsworth that I like. It was truly one of those things where I'm like, the earth felt like it was moving. And she's someone who's only existed as a name in a spreadsheet for me for like 10 years.
Gotcha.
And so I was very excited to finally see her.
She's the one in The Wolfman who's like, yeah, you're cursed, you're screwed, and you're going to die.
Okay. She's awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
So speaking of names in spreadsheets, I'm mostly happy with the Oscar nominations. Obviously, I think, you know, the most aggressively upsetting thing is that Greta Gerwig was not nominated for Best Director.
That's insane to me.
Yeah.
Considering, like, the movie's nominated for Best Picture, but not...
Well, there's Greta 10 Gerwig. Slots, right? So there's 10 Best Pictures, and there's only 5 Best Directors. So half of them or more aren't going to get nominated. Those are the facts. And
I feel like anybody who can take Barbie, the source material of Barbie,
yeah,
and turn it into a meaningful and entertaining story, a movie. Yeah. Like,
well, she got a screenplay nomination, she and her partner.
But still, like, without her direction, though, was there really, is there really,
no,
Ken?
It's a really, it is a very directed movie, and it's a very autory kind of movie, and so it's frustrating that she didn't get nominated. And it's also frustrating to be told that I shouldn't be upset that she didn't get nominated because a different woman did get nominated. Right.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't know. There was only room for one vagina. Like, stop. Like.
There has been 1 year ever where there were two. And I think it was.
It was 2020.
2020.
Yeah. And
when movies died. Then we let two in.
I'm pretty sure there's been 8 women total. And now we haven't, you know, Greta Gerwig has been nominated before. So now there is an 8th woman nominated, right? Mm. So, like, that's wonderful. There's been roughly 240 different men nominated. And there's been around 400 nominations overall.
Right.
Jane Campion remains the only woman who's been nominated for Best Director twice. It's frustrating. It's just one of those things that you're going to get angry about. And it's weird when people tell you not to be angry about something that's so blatantly upsetting. And then additionally, the one thing I said in the only actual conversation I had about this, as opposed to just reading people being, you know, spouting off on the internet, I was like, Anatomy of a Fall, I liked, you know, I ranked it higher than Barbie. Mm. That's an amazing movie. But that is not a movie about or for women, right? Barbie is one of the most about and for women movies in the history of Hollywood.
Right.
And so for the director's branch to say, well, it's not our favorite, we're not interested in it, hurts as a woman. That's how I feel.
It's infuriating. And as much as I think the efforts to diversify the Academy are frequently showing up in what wins, because
everybody votes on what wins.
Because everybody votes on what wins. And so Parasite wins. And so Everything Everywhere wins. And, you know, you get somewhat more interesting winners. But the nominations, except for Best Picture, are still these tiny groups. It's the nine, the directing nomination is the 900 directors in the Academy. You know, you don't want to get into ageism and say, oh, they're all 90. They're all 90. But there's a lot of them that are not like working right now, who have been there forever. And frankly, I don't know how many old people you've talked to recently did not see 100 movies last year.
Right.
Might have seen 15 movies last year.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know how to fix that, but I do know that if you look at these nominees, as much as they are always trying to inject more people and more perspective into the voting, there is such a big part of that 11,000 people that is so impressed by white men doing hard work, which is why Oppenheimer, 13 nominations, when Napoleon all over, when Maestro all over, when Killers of the Flower Moon all over. Now, I liked all of those movies, but that doesn't mean that you have to put them up for every category every time someone does a movie like that.
Right.
I mean, I feel... I don't know.
You didn't want to do this discourse, and now here we are.
I know.
Doing this discourse.
Yeah, that's exactly correct.
And here's the thing: is like, I haven't seen any of those movies, like Maestro, Oppenheimer, whatever, Napoleon. But just by what I gather that they're about, what I know that they're about, and what I gather how they're presented, is that we've had those movies before. We've seen, we've heard those stories. We've seen those dudes. We know they can do this. Like, it's not anything new. Like, it's not to say that they're not good. It's just the fact that, okay, like, but Barbie, you know, just, you know, right off the tip, like, it's just like, that's different. Like, and then especially for, like, me, like, I came into the whole Barbie, like, once I found out they were doing this thing, I was a cynic as fuck about this. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck this. Like, I don't want to. I was like, the only way I'm watching a Barbie movie is if it's about Barbie and Ken, the serial killers. But
Ryan Gosling got to you.
Even then, I was like, oh, Ryan. Begrudgingly. It's like, oh. But I went ahead and watched it. And yes, it's well done film. And just, I don't know. It's just, it's bullshit that we still have to. Dude, this is like, how many ways can you give me a vanilla cake? And And be, and I'm supposed to be like, oh my God, like it's starting to feel like, you know, every time, like I love my child, but like every like 5 minutes, look what I made. And it's just like, you know, and I have to be excited every fucking time.
Is Kaja Martin Scorsese in this situation?
But this isn't just the Oscars. This isn't just, you know, I talked about how I was going to start reading Sight and Sound to try to get that like very artful, more intellectual perspective, which is much different than the way I do things. And I was frustrated to find that they were like, obviously Killers of the Flower Moon is our number one movie of the year, because it and we're so no nonsense about like far and away this is the, and it's like, you're not even, you are walking into that and saying, I'm about to see the best movie of the year.
Yeah.
And I think that as much as Killers of the Flower Moon is good, Robin likes it more than I do.
I like it more than anybody I know. Yeah.
The subtext, I
like it more than Lily Gladstone does.
It's just like, at a certain point, you know, to take it completely away, let's talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Mm. I bet that most of the people voting for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I know this, could not sit down and tell you what are the criteria you're voting on. Mm. Right?
Right.
Are you voting on the most influential people? Are you voting on the most popular people? Are you voting on the most, the people you love the most? Right. 'Cause those are all different things. And I think that a lot of Oscar voters, and it probably is some of the older ones, but everyone to a degree, because we all have our biases, are voting on whether or not the thing did the things that we want the movies to do.
Yeah.
And what they're not doing is, and in any way thinking, what group of nominees and group of work represents the year in cinema that we want to hold up.
Right.
And a lot of people say, well, that's not, no, you're supposed to vote for the things that you like the best. You're not supposed to consider things like, oh, what are the most deserving? No, you get what I have a ballot for a somewhat lesser awards show. Inevitably, usually that number one is the thing that I like the most. But when I'm going for two and three, and when I'm going down the ballot, I am trying at least a little bit to go, what is good if it were nominated? What do I want to be a nominee?
You have a particularly interesting position as a critic, because like the point of your job is to tell people what to put their time towards and what to put their attention towards.
Yeah.
And so I do think that the Critics' Choice Awards, you know, we make fun of them constantly, but I think that it's cool that there is a National Critics Association that can bestow these things, because that is a very specific purpose. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's fair for, you know, the Academy, they are people in the industry recognizing each other. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so some of it is also going to be, you know, who's really nice always. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm okay with it. At the end of the day, the other thing I wanted to say, like, you know, I didn't want to have this discourse. Oscars nomination morning is the most exciting morning of the year for me. I get more excited about nominations than I do about the actual awards.
Yeah,
and I get so hyped up at 8:30 a.m. every year. And then by 9:30, and there's inevitably heartbreak, whatever. Right. By 9:30, the discourse has turned to awards are meaningless. Why would anyone feel bad for a woman who directed a movie that made $1 billion? Blah, blah, blah. Yep. Meh, 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 meh. And these are the people who I just watched talk about football all fucking weekend. Right.
Exactly.
And I'm like, it's just fucking sports, but for the movies. Please let me have fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good stuff in those nominations. After we took the Haymakers, which was really just, I don't know if there's another thing I'm really mad about.
I mean, I don't feel great in my heart that Margot Robbie wasn't nominated for Best Actress,
no,
but it was incredibly challenging. That was a really...
Very stacked.
It's a stacked field. I'm never going to be upset about Annette Bening getting an Oscar nomination, right? Like, I cannot do that.
I went back and looked. Of my top 10 movies of last year, 7 of them are nominated for Best Picture. Oh. That's never happened before, and it might never happen again.
Yeah.
And 3 of those are kind of difficult non-American films. Past Lives, Anatomy of Fall, and Zone of Interest are in my top 10, and they're all Best Picture nominees. That's really cool. I loved the Colman Domingo nomination. Like, that movie is so forgotten.
Worthy nomination from a bad movie. Yeah. Those things happen. And he's great, and he's gonna have a great outfit.
He is the first gay man or person, I'd have to double check, nominated for playing a gay character.
Well, no, really? Ian McKellen in Gods and Monsters.
The second one of those.
And also Stephanie Sue for last year for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and also Jodie Foster this year.
Maybe I saw out gay man playing an out gay character.
This is similar to how people are trying to find the exact right way to say Lily Gladstone is the first blank nominated for, yeah, for an acting Oscar. It's like, well, Graham Greene and Chief Dan George are First Nations.
Wasn't
not
Keisha Castle Hughes nominated for
she's
Whale
She's Maori.
Rider?
Yeah. Yeah, so she's not an American, right? It's like you have to be like Indigenous American. And also, I'm very white and I don't totally understand all the distinctions there. Right. So it's possible being First Nations is much more distinct.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a different system of oppression that you lived under. So regardless, I'm thrilled that Lily Gladstone is nominated because I am obsessed with her.
I'm pumped about Sterling K. Brown's nomination.
I'm happy
for him.
Well, no, let's talk about American Fiction.
Zone of Interest just real quick first.
Great.
Zone of Interest, you're not going to see it if you're not interested in it, so there's not that much to say about it. What I do want to share to everyone is that if you have any kind of sensory sensitivities,
Don't watch Zone of Interest.
It has a low-level rumble of evil at all times, and or it will periodically stop just to remind you how oppressive and painful it is.
Yeah.
And it literally gave me a like pretty severe actual headache. So
and it's better if it's louder, but then it becomes more emotionally crippling. It's because then you can hear the screaming and the terror and the I think it's a very good movie because I think it is playing with the viewer's emotions in a very unconventional way.
Sure.
But I would not blame anyone who had the reaction you did, which is like, okay, good job, but go away.
It's good. My general reaction to it is like, there are things in there that were incredibly powerful, but I think it should have been a 20-minute short. Mm. I think that if it were a 20-minute short, it would have been just as, if not more powerful. It would not have caused me actual physical pain. And I don't think that actual physical pain is going to make me better understand the banality of evil.
Yeah.
And also, one shot too many.
Maybe.
Really liked that until they kind of spoiled it.
Yeah.
But so anyway, you know, no one is going to see or not see that on my recommendation. American Fiction. I saw it twice because Colin and I saw it because I was excited for it, or at least really curious about it. And then our buddy Maddie wanted to see it on his birthday, so I saw it a second time, and I liked it a lot more the second time.
Hmm.
Because that movie is, I guess the whole thing is it's just a whole meta kind of thing where it's just a family dramedy, and it's marketed as racial satire because I guess that you can't make a movie about a black family having family issues unless you market it as racial satire that white people can feel good about for getting the jokes in.
That's at least what the studios think, I'm sure.
Yeah, so like, and that's like a parallel to the story in the book, I guess, right? Like, but at the same time, I wish it were just the family.
Yeah.
But I love them. Like, I'd watch a whole movie about Lorraine and Maynard.
Yeah.
They're so sweet. And Sterling K. Brown's so charming. And also, I love that he's an Oscar nominee.
I love him. I love Sterling K. Brown so much.
Last night, I could not sleep for obvious reasons. And I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to watch the first thing I ever saw Sterling K. Brown in, which was an episode of Supernatural.
Yes.
That I watched because Tara from Buffy was in it.
Yes.
And I remember, you know, this is 20 years ago-ish, being like, who the fuck is this guy? He has got it.
He's amazing.
So here we are, and he is in my spreadsheet, and good for him.
Did you like the ending?
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to give anything away, but I'm going to say, like, clever meta moments. I don't know the formula, because half the time a clever meta moment happens, and I go, aha, delightful. And half the time a clever meta moment happens and I go, you ruined the movie. It didn't work for me. But I still like that movie and love the performances, particularly the two performances that were nominated.
Mm.
They were both fantastic.
Yeah. Jeffrey Wright, also, it's ridiculous he's never been nominated before, even though he's one of those people where I'm always like, but what would he have been nominated for? But he's just like, when it's like, name some of the best working actors today, he comes up quickly. And so thank God he's finally nominated.
Godzilla Minus One, Oscar nominee.
Yeah.
thumbs up.
Oh, and I was also happy that Perfect Days got an international film nomination. I loved that movie. Nimona got an animated feature nomination. Loved that movie. So, like, there's a ton to be happy about in the Oscar nominations. Like I said, I'm happy about Jodie Foster. I'm happy about America Ferrera. We've been rewatching Superstore, and so, like, it was really cool. Thank you. And I'm just going to leave it in. Before we started recording, I was like, hey, you need to put a hand up if I start talking too fast. Camila
fun,
just did it.
Fun fact, that was actually 2 weeks ago. But right. It still applies.
No, well, I haven't stopped being hypomanic.
No, it was very exciting. It's one big glaring thing, but if you compare this to a lot of the more, a lot of recent, and I'm saying recent in like the last 10 years, Oscar mornings, there's way more cool stuff that happened today and way less terrible stuff that happened today.
Yeah.
And a lot of good movies to see. If you're a normal person, watch any of the 10 Best Picture nominees.
The main one that I hope normal people catch on to is Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
Because everyone will like that movie.
Yeah. It's so compelling and so easily. Yeah. But also Past Lives.
If you are a woman, watch Past Lives.
Are you still mad at me about Emma Stone winning that thing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always going to be mad at you, Sean. But
at various points over the past 2 weeks, I've been like, does Robin hate me for a while? Like, and you haven't said anything. I've just like, it's like I look into the distance in the direction of your neighborhood and I see waves of rage coming in my direction.
What I'll say, Sean. If Lily Gladstone wins the Oscar, you're forgiven because your actions reminded Oscar voters that their actions have consequences. Because
if you have no idea what we're talking about, Emma Stone won Best Actress at the Critics' Choice Awards in an upset over Lily Gladstone. I voted for Emma Stone, so, but I...
So we assume it was a one-vote margin.
We assume it was a one-vote margin, and that vote was mine. But I said this, and I mean it. What I actually want is for Emma Stone to win the less important award that I'm involved in, because I loved that performance so much, and for Lily Gladstone to win the Oscar, because that's important. But I know that's hypocritical, because the thing I do influences the other thing.
But it could influence it in the way of, like, Oscar voters need to be reminded that whoever they vote for, they are contributing to that person goes away with an Oscar, right? Because that way they know to do things like vote for Chadwick Boseman, who tragically died, instead of giving sleeping Anthony Hopkins another Oscar.
He wasn't even awake. Was not even awake at the time.
They need to think about those things because, as we discussed, this is not necessarily a scientific process of discernment determining the best movie. It is a game of sports. Movie sports.
But you're not actively angry at me because I like Poor Things.
Let's talk about it later. Let's talk about it on March 13th.
I knew it. I knew there was rage coming from that direction as I adjust my Poor Things tote bag. Let's draw a movie. What's going on this time?
We have a special draw, everybody.
Yeah. Yay. And so you know how we do the Christmas and the Halloween movies. Well, for February, we're doing movies that Camila likes because it's my birthday month. No, I'm joking.
it's also Sean's birthday month. Oh, God.
Yeah,
that's maybe true. We should just do Spooky Season Part 2.
We're doing Black History Month, so movies that are featuring Black actors prominently in the film, basically. We have compiled a list of those films. And just to be clear, I know sometimes, like, I questioned it, The Rock and Vin Diesel, do they fit into this category? Well, The Rock does, because The Rock's father is Black and he identifies as Black. Vin Diesel has not identified as Black. I believe his adoptive father is Black, or one of his parents, and he just says that he's a person of color. So Vin movies are not included. The Rock movies are included, which I also was just looking for a reason not to include any of the Fast and Furious.
Now, Robin made the suggestion. Camila made the list. Were you looking for specifically the actors or the subject matter, or what? How did you approach?
Well, it was mostly actors, and also like if there would be one first and or second on the call sheet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the way I did it. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have time to like really like dig down, because it was going to like get away from me.
Taking the time to do this much, because I'm sure that was a bear of a task.
Actually, you know, surprisingly, it was not that bad, because I was able to just like, there were like maybe five movies that I had to like Google, like, what is this movie? Like most of them was like, yep, that's it. That works. Yep. But yeah. And we also decided that we would have a couple of special rules as to where, so we get a free veto if we come across a movie that exhibits a little bit, black trauma that is just like really overplaying it kind of thing, like The Help. So because nobody really wants to spend, nobody wants a depressing Black History Month. No, so
that's not what we're here for. So this could go a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Is that going to take the form of just free vetoes or?
Basically, I'm going to just put it out there. I feel like I should have the say on it.
I agree.
That's what I was hinting at, but it felt wrong to say it.
No, so. I'm fully on board.
Okay.
It's Black History Month. Camila gets unlimited free vetoes. The end. Great.
Reparations.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
40 acres and a veto. Like.
And we're going to do two. I think the calendar works out, so we'll do this, and we will stay on this subsection of the list next time.
Also, this was Camila's idea because we did a movie draft last February, and you were like, I specifically picked movies that I thought were interesting for Black History Month. Yeah. And I said, we should do a real proper
draft. That's
right,
draft. Yeah. And you reminded us this year.
And then you did all the work.
But you did go, we should do that.
Okay.
And I want you to have a little bit of allyship credit.
Okay, oh, yeah. Thanks.
Because I totally forgot about it.
The draw is Safe House from 2012.
Oh,
I will accept that.
Guys, I don't know if you know this, but I used to live in Cape Town.
I forgot that this was set there, but
I cannot wait to talk about Easter Food Bazaar.
Oh, it's funny. I think there was another thing. I had something about Denzel or Will Smith.
I think you did like a $10 bet if we don't land on a movie with Denzel or Will Smith.
Yeah. So yeah, we would get a free bingo square if we land on a movie that does not have Denzel or Will Smith, and this one has Denzel.
That's an Oscar bit of trivia that I need to look into. Mark Harris said he was like, somebody asked, hey, is this the first time two black actors have been nominated for Best Actor? And he's like, that's happened 6 times. And I was like, wait, but how many times has it happened when one of those people was not named Denzel Washington? And I haven't done the math yet, so I don't know.
What a cast. I know I saw this at the time, and it's Denzel and Ryan Reynolds, but also Robert Patrick, Vera Farmiga, Brendan Gleeson,
Ruben
Sam Shepard, Ruben Blades.
I think it's Blades because he's Spanish, but I've definitely heard in trailers Blades.
And Joel Kinnaman. It's a good cast. I don't remember whether or not I liked it.
Like, it's not very good.
Okay.
It's fine. It's not the point. It's on Peacock.
And it's on Peacock. Of course. It's good choice. Good choice, everybody. So next time, no one is safe. That used to be that's the tagline. The tagline is Safe House, no one is safe. And the joke on Doug Loves Movies used to be, no one is safe, no one is house. Until then, guarding Tess, March 11th, 1994. What was the number one song in America?
Ace of Base.
Go on.
The Sign?
Correct.
Very right distinct away. Time in my life.
Well, it was a very big moment for Ace of Base.
Yes.
Which... This is. I asked myself two questions when I saw that. I was like, one, okay, in retrospect, is that song good?
Yes.
But like, I had to check because you have to think. You have to think with like a gem from the past. You're like, is that good or just familiar? No, that's good. What genre or style or type of thing is it?
Dance pop.
Swedish bands who don't speak English.
Yeah.
ABBA too.
Yes. Yeah. They really were. We're doing ABBA again, everybody.
Great. All right.
It was fun. It was a nice 12 minutes of... No, that was like a couple years.
They had a decent album. I remember owning and really liking the album.
Isn't one of them a Nazi?
God damn it. We were almost there.
Right.
Sorry.
And that's the tie between Ace of Base and The Zone of Interest we didn't know we'd get.